Corn, soybeans, and spring wheat futures, yeah, they were all on the defensive. Winter wheat futures did trade higher for the first time in a while. I'm happy to say livestock futures ended the session with solid gains. We'll find out why from the guys at Pro Farmer.
Live from latitude 41.7 north by longitude 86.25 west via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we have Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady and senior market analyst Jeff Wilson. Right after the news with Mike Pearson, we'll check on price action from Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm producer Joe Stackler, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Joe, you know, when Davis does the show open like that, it's sometimes hard to tell exactly where he is coming from. You will never be beaten on specificity. There we go. On the specifics. On the specifics of where you're coming from then in that open. That was pretty impressive, dude.
Well, thank you. But I have to admit, I sort of cut a couple corners there. So if somebody was going to try some kind of a laser-guided strike on those coordinates, they would miss me by about 200 feet.
Okay. Well, good. That's the way to build in a little bit of safety.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. Thank you, buddy. Mike Pearson back in for Davis. How you doing, Mike?
I'm fantastic, Chip. Always great to be back here on AgriTalk chatting with you. It's been a crazy news day, which I'm sure we'll get to in just a little bit. But what are things looking like up there in the beautiful country where you're at?
It's an unbelievable day. It's cool. The sun is shining. There's a little bit of a breeze blowing. There's still a chance that we could see an afternoon shower blow up, but I think it's a pretty light chance with as cool as it is. But boy, some of the areas that really needed a rain got a rain overnight.
Yeah, they really did. And, you know, we're definitely seeing that, I think, reflected in some of the pricing, which I know you'll cover in great detail throughout the day. But I tell you what, it's just one of those summers, Chip.
Yes, it certainly is. And speaking of one of those summers, the news cycle has just got us churning and running hard, man. Let's go ahead and get started with the news because we got to spend a little time on this first item.
Yeah, we absolutely do. So our alerts were blowing up last night. White House Special Advisor Peter Navarro rattled the commodity and equity markets overnight when he said the trade deal with China was, quote, over. Navarro quickly backtracked on the comment, and President Trump tweeted an all's well with Chinese trade comment that then helped to boomerang equity values back to the upside and lift grain prices off the session lows.
I saw it. It was a Reuters report. When I saw it, I didn't see it originally on Fox, but my jaw hit the ground. I was, are you kidding me? Who is the bulldog Navarro getting after now? It was just, and then all of a sudden he started to backtrack from this thing. And Mike, did you see the comments?
So I just watched the clip after it had already aired. I did not catch it live. I got the same Reuters alert you did, Chip, and Twitter was blowing up all over the place. Right. And then by the time I had actually gone to watch the clip, he had started to backtrack. It was an incredible about face. And kudos to them for doing it quickly.
Yeah, kudos to them. But can you believe that he could backtrack from it? And then come with the, it was taken out of context. It was not taken out of context. He said, oh, no, that's over.
Yeah. His exact quote was, is the trade deal ongoing? No, it's over. And then, well, you know, they misunderstood me, misinterpreted me. No, there wasn't. That was a misspeaking moment, and that's okay.
And then it comes back to, well, I was really talking about the trust between the two countries. Oh, that was shocking. That was shocking. Now, the good news is tomorrow morning in the first hour of AgriTalk, we're going to try to bring some clarity to the whole situation with this. We are going to have a conversation with U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer live on the show tomorrow morning. Obviously, the comments from Navarro will be one of the topics of conversation. So looking very much forward to that conversation. All right.
Be sure to tune in, folks. In the meantime, Chip, wheat traders, today we're on the buy side of winter wheat and the sell side of spring wheat futures. And the trend continued today despite a 6-point drop in spring wheat rated good to excellent. Top-rated spring wheat remains solid at 75%. Winter wheat harvest advanced 14 points in the week ended June 21st, reaching 29% complete, and that kept buying interest. July hard red winter wheat was 3¾ cents higher at 435. July SRW firmed a penny to 486. July spring wheat dropped 4¾ cents to close at 514, Chip.
Yeah, and that winter wheat harvested progress 3 points ahead of the 5-year average.
Yesterday's session low close in corn turned into a gap lower open after the USDA increased the amount of the corn crop rated good to excellent by 1 point to 72%. Overnight rainfall in some of the driest corn growing areas and the potential for more rain this week also kept buyers on the sidelines of the market throughout the session. Technically, the past 2 days erased about 3 weeks worth of work to build a base, opening downside risk to the 315 level in July futures. July corn was down 3¼ cents. Down 3¼ cents at 325. September corn fell 4 to 329. December corn closed at 336¾, down a nickel on the day.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating for the chart watchers in here right now, Mike. That it was a lot of work that was erased in 2 days. It's going to be easy to get on the sell side of this corn market based on what the charts look like.
You bet. Soybean prices tried to climb to the plus side of unchanged throughout the session, but ended with modest losses. Beans pushed higher after USDA announced the sale of 132,000 metric tons of U.S. beans for delivery to China in the new crop marketing year. Soybean crop conditions are now rated 70% good to excellent, down 2 points from last week. July bean futures were a penny and a quarter lower at 875. August beans slipped 3 cents to 872. November beans closed lower at 874, down 5¼ cents, Chip.
Yeah, all right. Hey, Mike, can you stick around for the start of the next segment? If you can, great. If you can't, that's fine too. But I want to get Joe Vaklovic in here real quick.
Let's do it.
All right, let's bring in Joe Vaklovic, Standard Grain. How you doing, Joe?
I'm good. How are you, Chip?
Good, good, good. What's the highlights? What are you looking at in these markets and saying that's good?
Well, the good thing, I guess, if you wanted to paint some friendly news here, soybean demand's been better. We saw another flash sale to China today. That's a good thing. Ethanol is recovering, albeit very slowly. We've seen 7 consecutive weeks of better ethanol production, but we're still grinding corn for ethanol, I think 22% below last year's pace. So we've got a lot of work to do there, and I've said it before, this ethanol thing and the demand destruction there, that's the biggest problem for the corn market.
Yeah. Boy, are you seeing anything on the crops that would be a trigger for some short covering in corn?
Well, if you were to point to any crop issues, you've got some dryness out west, and then you've got some dryness in the east that does exist. And it was illustrated in the crop ratings the last couple of weeks. We saw the declines in the west last week. We saw some declines in the eastern corn belt this week. But if the forecast is any indication, looks like there's going to be plenty of rain throughout the Corn Belt between now and really the first week of July.
Yeah, seems like the phrase non-threatening would be the way that most would describe the weather outlook, right?
Yeah, I can't really remember a year in which prices were so subdued this time of year.
Yeah.
We're usually at least jittery regarding weather, even if it's not threatening. And I don't even think we have that going on right now.
That's right. It is tough, no doubt about it. All right. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, see you, Chip. Bye.
That's Joe Vaklovic, Standard Grain. Okay, when we come back, Mike's going to be back. We're going to wrap up the news, and then we're going to get into a conversation with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady and Pro Farmer senior market analyst Jeff Wilson right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, You've calmed down, but you're still thinking.
Yes.
We're here all day. AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. We didn't quite get through all the news. Mike Pearson, Zahner Ag Hedge is still with us. Or I guess it's Zahner Group is more correct, isn't it, Mike?
Well, you bet. Zahner Ag Hedge is a division of Zahner Financial Services, but Ted Seifert, who your guests or your listeners know so well, is the head of the Zahner Ag Hedge department. So that is who I plead my fealty to.
Perfect. Perfect. Hey, we didn't quite wrap up the news. Can we do that quick?
Absolutely. We got to hit cotton. We got to hit the meats because we actually saw some movement to the upside today. Taking a look at cotton, USDA says 40% of the cotton crop is rated good to excellent, down 3 points from last week. Cotton rated poor to very poor jumped 8 points to 25% in the week. Much of that crop problem was factored into prices, with July cotton up 28 points to close at 62.80, but December fell 42 points to 59.43. Jumping over into livestock, beef in frozen storage at the end of May came in below trade expectations, pushing cattle prices higher. August live cattle futures were $2.75 higher at $97.20, and December cattle were up a buck at $103.52 and a half. August feeders surged $1.45 to $133.20. Tighter than expected pork stocks supported hog prices. July lean hogs were 7.5 cents higher at $46.90, and December hogs jumped 107.5 to $52.30. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Sounds great. I'll be here.
All right. That's Mike Pearson, Zahner Ag Hedge. Okay. Let's get the conversation started. With the guys from Pro Farmer, we got Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beege, how you doing?
I'm all right. Sun's out today after a lot of rainfall from Friday through Sunday, or Monday, I guess it was.
Yep. I hear the baseball team launched a boat, docked another ship.
Yeah, that's right. we're sailing. Hopefully we stay sailing.
I love it. I love it. Yep. Nothing wrong with bringing those championships home early in the season, is there?
Well, I like them later in the season, actually.
That's true.
Early on's okay too, as long as we win the last one. We got a state title. That's what we're going for. But we'll see.
Absolutely.
We're progressing.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's one of the things I always talk to the kids about. Was we can take time, some time, making progress during the season, but the goal is always to win that last game that you play of the year. So, all right, Jeff Wilson, Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you today?
Good, good, good. Did you get some rain up your way?
We did. We needed it. It was pretty timely. It wasn't a lot, but came down in a quick hurry, and you could definitely see, my garden looks a lot better than it did yesterday.
Good, good, good. Real quick, I want to mention, because I did not make mention of it yesterday, and I should have, milk futures. Let's take a quick look at that, because the July contract today was down 11 cents, 22.08 a hundredweight. August down 34 cents to 20.07, and September down 41 cents to 18.63. But guys, go back to the conversation that we had with Mike North from Commodity Risk Management Group last Wednesday. And give that a listen on the need to get some downside price protection in place in this milk market. I think that'll be worth the listen. And what we talked about on Wednesday applies to the market today. There's no question about that. Guys, let's start with the livestock trade, because it was so impressive today, I thought. And Brian, fundamentally, cold storage report had something to do with it.
Yeah, the cold storage, Chip, was, we figured they would be drawdowns, and that's typically the case in May, but much greater than what was anticipated. In pork in particular, it was the largest monthly decline ever for any month, and this was the smallest May inventory number for pork stocks since 2010. So pretty significant drawdown, and obviously, you know, that was COVID related with the processing plant slowdowns and those types of things. Moving forward, the key there is going to be, does demand keep up with the extra supply that we got coming, because those backlog marketings are going to be coming? Slaughter operations have increased this month, obviously, and will continue to do so a little bit as we move forward. And so we're going to need the demand to chew through the supplies. Similar situation in beef. It was the second largest monthly drawdown ever on beef. Okay. And so you know, just pretty phenomenal numbers, really, when you look at them, especially when you chart them out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think both markets are still at a price, Jeff, that I'm talking beef market, pork market, that is encouraging movement from processors to retail, because movement has been pretty good. But at some point, we're going to have to provide the market with some incentive to put product back in storage again, right?
Well, I think you probably have seen some of that since June 1.
Okay.
The numbers were started. The one thing I'll note on the pork was that the bone-in picnics and hams, those mm-hmm. both increased, because obviously it takes more processing and people to do the processing. So those actually did increase, but every other cut was down. But I would think that at these kind of price levels, pork looks pretty attractive to start refilling. And I think that most of the retail channels are starting to get refilled now, especially on the pork side, less so on the beef. That'll take maybe another couple of weeks, especially if we have good movement during the 4th of July weekend on beef. I think we yeah. hopefully we'll see some features on that. And then the other part of the story is the slaughter so far this week, first 2 days of the week, down 5,000 head on the pigs compared with a year ago, and down 5,000 head on the cattle from a year ago. So we're getting closer and closer to that level. The more we can get those backlogged animals through the processors and into the channels and moving out, you know, the other thing is if we can get the exports, because we're pretty attractively priced now, especially after the weakness of the dollar we've seen over the course of the past, 6 weeks. Now, if we can get a little more weakness in the dollar, then we can really maybe start to ramp up some exports, not only to China, but some of the other key buyers.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mexico, South Korea continue to show up in the meat export demand too. Beej, on the slaughter side of things, being off a couple thousand head on cattle, I think, is pretty acceptable. Being off a couple thousand head a day on hogs from a year ago is pretty remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think so. The numbers are better than what the industry had indicated, and the thought process was that we would get back to about 90, maybe 95% or whatever of capacity of what it was prior to COVID. But it seems like they're rolling them through pretty well. The problem is we just got such a backlog that it's going to take quite some time to work all that through.
Right, right. Okay, let's go to some price outlook here, Jeff. Nice upside move, got through some resistance in the cattle market today. August contract touched 98 cents, spiked it barely. I don't know, what do you think? Can we see this market get back up to those May highs around 102?
It's going to be a challenge, and it still will come down to getting the beef movement moving a little bit better. But got it close above the 100-day moving average. Haven't seen that since late May. And when we did that the last time, we went straight back down. So follow-through buying would be very encouraging for a run. You know, if we can get it close above that $100 level in the August cattle, that might give us a run towards 104. And then after that, if we can clear that level, maybe we can get to 108. But still it comes down to we have to move the beef. And we have seen improvement in the retail or the wholesale market. Now, if we can just see a further rise in some of the export sales, the last 2 weeks have been very good on beef exports, and just want to keep that rolling.
Yeah, yeah. Beej, when I look at this hog chart, I mean, we gapped lower yesterday, couldn't fill the gap, had a low-range close, got that price-friendly cold storage report, and we at least filled the gap, but I don't feel a whole lot better about the market.
No, we didn't really do anything more. We pushed above the five-day average and didn't even close above it. So, you know, a lot of work to do there in the hog market. The one thing I will say about hogs, though, The premium structure in that market is very unusual. Typically, you would see your lowest prices of the year in the third and fourth quarter. We have premiums in the fall and winter month contracts right now, and that's some of the China factor. The expectation is that China will continue to actively buy U.S. pork because they need our supplies. And I think it was important that the market, wasn't open overnight when some of the comments from Navarro were made, and then Trump was able to put that fire out by throwing some water on it pretty quickly. So we saw the extreme price action in the soybean market because of that, but we didn't see that in the pork market today because of that, not reopening until 8:30 this morning.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Boy, this hog market, here we are just over $52 in the August contract. We got to get that market all the way back up to $58 before we start to make any serious technical progress on it. We are talking to the guys from Pro Farmer, Jeff Wilson and Brian Grady. We'll be back with more of that conversation here in just a moment. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, corn, soybean, and spring wheat CCI ratings drop. We're going to talk to Brian and Jeff about the crop condition ratings coming up here in just a little bit. Pro Farmer crop consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier is still leaning down in both his U.S. corn and soybean crop estimates. Big year-over-year gains in Chinese imports of corn, wheat, and sorghum already being reported. The EU slashes tariffs on imports of corn, rye, and sorghum. We'll find out from the guys here in just a bit if that can turn into some additional demand. Better weather expected to lift the South African corn crop. And China approves two new GM soybeans for import. It is always good to be making progress there. Check out all the Pro Farmer has to offer. Go to tryprofarmer.com.
Hey. Oh. Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Brian Grady, I think it's always funny when you guys are on, it's like we're hearing straight from Jeff Wilson's playlist when the bumps are playing.
I thought that maybe it was his phone. I didn't know what was going on.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Thank you for joining us today. We are talking to Brian and Jeff from Pro Farmer today. Before we get back to that conversation, let's recap how the markets closed today. July hard red winter wheat, 3¾ cents higher at 435. July SRW firmed a penny to 486. July corn futures, 3¼ cents lower, 325. December corn closed at 336¾, down a nickel on the day. July beans, a penny and a quarter lower at 875. Novi beans closed at 874, down 5¼ cents. August live cattle futures, $2.75 higher at 97.20. August feeder cattle surged $1.45 to 133.20. And July lane hog futures, 7½ cents higher at 46.90. Jeff, did I miss anything on the hogs and cattle that we needed to talk about?
I think it's very important to just mention that Thursday is the quarterly USDA hogs and pigs report. And that report might be as important as any for the corn market going forward, because we're going to get some indication of how much liquidation has occurred and how many plans for farrowings have been changed in the course of the past quarter. Traders are kind of looking for about a 2% decline in the number of hogs kept for breeding. If you can get something as closer to 3% or 4%, that will move the needle towards the bullish side. If it stays around the 2%, it might not do very much. March, May pig crop also expect to be down about 1.5%. If we could get that down a little bit more than that, that would be helpful, but I don't know. And then we got to see how many heavyweight hogs we have, and the most important things will be, what were the farrowing intentions? They're both expected to be down a little over 4.5% based on trade expectations. It's really going to take something more than 5% or 6% on those June, August, and September, November farrowing intentions to really put a much more friendlier tone into the hog market going forward. And then that could have some negative implications, obviously, for corn use demand going into the final half of the year.
Right, right. Brian, as Jeff is going through that, I'm thinking to myself, how many stories, items have I read in Pro Farmer over the last, call it, 2 years about expansion in the U.S. hog herd to produce more pork, to provide more supplies for the Chinese, for China. And it just, it's such a weird shift that this market has gone through.
Well, it took something that, one of these black swan events, the COVID stuff, to force it. I mean, because otherwise it was just, no matter what the farrowing intention said, that we outproduced it.
Yes.
The pigs per litter number was always a record. I mean, I forget, it's like 11 quarters in a row or something crazy like that's a record. And so the production just kept outpacing. We were producing plenty of pork, and it showed in the pork stocks. And we talked about in the first segment how dramatically they've changed over the past 2 months here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We got to switch gears. Jeff, start of the show, I was exhibiting some frustration with the price performance in corn. Am I out of line? What's the charts telling you?
They're not looking very healthy, obviously. We were basically knocking on the door to the point where we could have knocked out some more short positions to end last week. And then we closed a little bit lower inside day yesterday, gap lower overnight when we got the surprise increase in the U.S. corn ratings. And there were better than expected rains across the eastern corn belt overnight. So the market's on the defensive now. We're sitting on a very shallow uptrend line. And the market will need to perform here now going through next week's grain stocks report as well as the new acreage numbers. Otherwise, the market could be beginning its new seasonal downtrend, and that's not a very pleasant proposition going forward. It's not going to go straight down, obviously. We still have enough weather uncertainties into mid-July with the warmer, drier outlooks into that time frame, but there's no extreme heat. And there is another rain forecast for this weekend, right. So we're running out of bullets to shoot down these bearish funds. And right now, they still, I mean, like today, they were out selling calls, they were out buying put spreads. So those are pretty active today in the corn trade. So it looks like they're putting on some of the short positions that they took off last week. So if the weather changes, and the other thing about the weather right now is that these 6 to 10 day forecasts have been very unreliable, and the forecasters are very very tentative about saying anything longer than 5 days out.
Yep. Yeah. It's a tough environment to predict the weather in. There's no question about that. Brian, Dease corn has traded in less than a 25-cent range since the middle of April. It just seems weird for the market to do that.
Yeah, pretty much stuck in neutral, Chip, and unresponsive to weather. I think they're kind of waiting on China to see if we see some big purchases from the Chinese. My expectation is right now China's probably sitting there looking at everything and saying, hey, there's a really big crop coming. Unless we have some kind of a weather scare, let prices fall down to us instead of to go after them and book them right now.
Right, right. Before we get over to beans, one more thing on corn. Brian, USDA Prospective Plantings Report, 97 million acres on corn. We get an update next week in the June acreage report. What do you think? Can we get to that 97?
No, it's coming down from there. I think that there's no doubt about that. I just don't think it'll come down a lot. I mean, history tells us that, the prospective plantings are generally fairly close. I think, on average, probably about a million down or so. And that's about where we're at. Upper 95 million acre range is where we're sitting going into that report. I think the trade probably has something priced in at 94, 95, maybe a little bit higher than that range.
Okay. All right. Very good. Before we get to beans, last week it was all about buy the spring contract, sell the winter contract. This week we've got some strength in the winter contracts and pressure on spring wheat. What's going on there, Jeff?
It's massive spreading going on. I mean, like today's action makes no fundamental sense. The spring wheat crop ratings drop more than expected, 6%, 6 percentage points, and the winter wheat crop goes up. So, you know, why would you do that kind of spreading? Harvest is moving forward in the winter wheat crop, but it's just they're just playing that spread, and it's, you know, a lot of day trading going on in the spread. I think there was also some buying of wheat and selling of corn today, so that would focus on the winter wheat contracts more than the spring wheat contracts.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, so Brian, if we don't get all the way to 97 million acres of planted corn this year, do those acres, or at least some of those acres, go over to beans? USDA had us in the planting intentions report at 83.5.
Yeah, we'll be up from there. And that was kind of the expectation all the way back to the end of March when we got the original intentions. And I think that's carried through. The rapid planting pace, the rule of thumb is that if you can get in the field and get it planted, corn acres go up. But I think the 97 million, like I mentioned before, is a high watermark there, come down a little bit. Some of those acres will shift to soybeans.
Okay. All right. Boy, Jeff, looking at the bean chart, the Novi bean chart, 15-cent range basically in the overnight session, a great ability to come back from the lows had to be because we had a export sales announcement.
I think that was part of it. I mean, why not? I think also just relief that Trump said, no, we're not going to do that yet.
Right.
But there's still that worry out there that Navarro might have been signaling what the Trump or the White House strategists are thinking going into the election season. And who knows what happens. I mean, with Trump behind by 10 percentage points to Biden, he may use that as a weapon in terms of trying to get his base up and ready to go vote for him, that he's going to make sure that we hold the Chinese accountable. But then the offset of that is, maybe the Chinese are going to step forward here and buy more so that it doesn't get to that point, mm-hmm. even though it may, keep Trump's election prospects a little more friendlier than they are today. It's really crazy right now.
All right. Really good. Really good. Okay. Jeff, give the cotton guys 30 seconds here. What do you make of that market?
The cotton market is probably hitting its seasonal highs as well right now. But the story is we don't know what the acreage is going to end up being. USDA in March said 13.7 million acres. People that we have spoken with are thinking it's at least a million acres less than that, maybe more than that. I mean, when we had the rally going in May, it was talking it could be as low as 12 million acres. Now it's back up to maybe 12.7 million acres. But the story is still about demand. We still need to get the stores open. We need to get these clothes moving through the system and prevent the backlog of cotton supplies. Tomorrow's first notice day against July contract. We'll see who delivers, who takes delivery. That may set the tone for a couple days. But once that's over with, then it's all about weather, and the rains that we got in West Texas were helpful in some spots overnight.
Awesome. Good work, you guys. Appreciate it. Beej, good luck with the baseball team. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, man.
All right. All right. And Jeff, thanks, dude. You always deliver. Good work, man.
All righty.
All right. That is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson, Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady. I'll be back to wrap things up here in just a moment.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Man, it is always good to talk with Jeff and with Brian. They stay on top of all the markets, have an opinion. And, you know, when Brian, you could hear it in Brian's voice, Joe, when he was talking about the overnight rainfall that the eastern areas got some unexpected rains and that it's going to help the crop there. You could feel the enthusiasm to push this market to the upside start to drain out of the conversation. You've been listening to the shows. How long have we been looking for that trigger that's going to encourage the professional trading funds from stepping off the short side of this corn market?
Oh, I mean, I've been here 8 months now, and
yeah, it's unbelievable. It's a record long period of time that the funds have been so heavily onto the short side of the market. At some point, and I keep arguing this, I've been arguing this for a while, at some point they've got to become discouraged by the fact that the corn market isn't going down. And then after a two-week period of building another base and building this argument that, hey, pay attention here, the corn market is not going down, that has to mean something, then we get the last 2 days in here and the market does set back and all of a sudden they're that much more comfortable on the short side of the market. And like Jeff was saying, not only are they short the futures market, but they're finding ways to use the options markets to build those synthetic short positions or just buy the put options. And it is pretty discouraging right now. The only thing that I would say, and this goes to the tone of the comments from Brian that we got about the corn market, the tone about the weather outlook that we had from Joe Vaklevic on today's show, and the tone from me, I thought about it only after I heard it from Brian, is that everybody's kind of given up on the potential for a weather scare for this corn and soybean crop. And that's usually about when it starts to develop, when everybody has given up on it. I don't see any sign of it. Are there some areas that are still very much in need of rainfall? Absolutely. Is it any more than what we would normally see? I don't know if it is or not. So it feels like it's going to be tough to get that going. But, you know, it's the old argument of what happens when everybody gets leaning onto one side of a canoe. You tip the doggone thing over and you gotta rebuild it and take it back the other way. Let's see. China's been in the news a lot today, and I'm going to go back to, believe it or not, a different item, but China is looking for I guess certification that any meat that we export to China, and now any soybeans or any products at all that we export to China, are free of the coronavirus. Now that's either telling us that's telling us one of two things. It's telling us that China does not agree with the science that transport on products like soybeans or chicken or pork or salmon or whatever, that transport of the virus is not a very effective way of transporting it. As a matter of fact, it doesn't work. Therefore, it's safe after a period of time, I guess. Those products are safe, or it's telling us that they have proof that it's not safe.
They found it on their end.
Yeah. Yeah. And if that's the case, and the only clue that they're giving us is, hey, we're going to need some certification that those soybeans there, that they don't have any, coronavirus on them. Yeah. That's what we need. If that's the only hint that they're giving us and they've discovered something else is true, that the virus does transport in a cargo of soybeans, and they're not telling the rest of the world, and they're letting trade continue, then you know, hey, fool us once, Yep. Shame on them. Fool us twice. Isn't that shame on us?
Yes, after that's that? Right. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So we probably ought to be paying some attention to what is going on with these demands that are coming in from China. National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for June 29th through July 3rd. Above normal temperatures over every place. No, over the Corn Belt. I was going to say every place that we grow corn in the country. But then when you get up into the PNW and look at those huge yields that they get up there, that's not every place that we grow corn. We grow corn in the PNW too, and they're expected to see below normal temperatures in the PNW. But the Corn Belt, above normal temperatures June 29th through July 3rd. And for rainfall, above normal precipitation over most of the Corn Belt. The expectations there, the exceptions there, as soon as I said it, the exceptions there, Michigan and most of Wisconsin, where normal rainfall is expected. So we've got the warm temperatures coming back, but at least we've got a chance for those warm temperatures to be quote unquote hidden by some rainfall. The 8 to 14 day for July 1 through July 7 has got the above normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt. And basically, it's the same rainfall pattern, above normal precipitation expected over most of the Corn Belt. The exception would be Wisconsin, Northern Illinois, and Michigan. So, yeah, big stuff there. Speaking of big stuff, we've got a big day tomorrow morning. Number one, we've got a farmer forum. We're going to be talking conservation efforts across the Midwest again, and then we will also have a conversation tomorrow morning with U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer. Really looking forward to that conversation. And then tomorrow afternoon, Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. For Mike Pearson, for Joe Stackler, and for me, thank you for listening today. Come back and join us again tomorrow for more AgriTalk.